probably one of your best known works, and that's The Snowman.
Yes.
And now, how did you become involved with that?
Well, curiously, I had a Canadian friend. This starts in Canada. That in the early 70s, I'd done a couple of films in Montreal with a director called Jerry Potterton. And he was making a series of the fairy stories, of the children's stories by Oscar Wilde. He's making them for Reader's Digest, CBS. He'd actually originally asked if I'd like to do The Happy Prince. And I said I'd love to do that. It was a marvelous story. And I'd actually sketched out a song for it, which was Walking in the Air. Mm-hmm. One thing and another, there was a big mix-up, and I've written the song. He said, I'm sorry, we've given the job to somebody else. I said, I can't believe this is not too good. Anyway, he felt very bad about this, and it's strange how things were. He came over some years later, it was about 1981, he came over, and he said, you know, hope you're still not upset about Happy. Oh, I said, that's years ago, it doesn't matter at all. So he said, I'm going into Charlotte Street, and let's have lunch. And he said, I just got to go into this television company. He's just picking up a check from a friend of mine, John Coates, who has this animation company. So I said, fine. So we walked in there. John Coates, who ran the company, said, Jerry introduced me. He said, how, Blake? He said, you write music for films, don't you? I said, yes, I do. So he said, we've done a little sketch of a thing called The Snowman. He said it was written by, he mentioned the name of another composer who'd actually written The Happy Prince. He said, would it be very unethical of me to ask you to look at this? And I said, well, I think in this particular case, no, I wouldn't. And I looked at it. I looked at this. The minute I saw this film with this snowman taking off, I thought, this tune that I had, this flying, walking in the air, it would work miraculously on this. It would be wonderful. And I also thought it could, because in a way I'd got this theme and had never used it, and it would work so perfectly. I said, I felt very confident. I said, look, we could do this whole film with no dialogue. So John said, I don't know how you mean. I said, well, let me do a demo. I'll show you what I mean. So several days later, I did a demo of it. Right, about 9 minutes, just to a pencil animatic. We recorded it, and the minute we did that, we realized that this music with this image was had got some sort of magic about it. So we took that into a Channel 4, and Jeremy Isaacs said, "Like, I think this would be a terrific thing." And so the film actually started to take off, and we got the money eventually. And I wrote the following year, in 1982, I filled out the score from the 9-minute sketch. I started again, turned it into a 26-minute, really like a little symphony almost, just all where all the music is actually upfront music, and it causes all the images to happen. Mm-hmm. And then added on this treble from a boy from St. Paul's Cathedral. I went and heard one afternoon, and when we'd done that, when we put the whole thing together in the fully coloured animation, it was just a delightful thing, and it became a success almost the second it went on television, which was Christmas 1982.
So yeah, it's been 25 years since.
I know. Don't remind me.
Since The Snowman's been out. What do you attribute to its longevity? Like, I mean, people are still performing it to this day, and still watching it to this day.
It every year there's more. It is some sort of phenomenon. I think it's for me, of course, it is unique in the fact that it is a film with no dialogue, where the music is the main element. Of course, there are that often happens within feature films or within documentaries and things. You have the music is important, but in this case, the music is really the key player. And I think this, coupled with the animation, which is hand-colored animation is a very potent thing. But also the story itself hits a whole lot of points in people. I think it actually, Raymond Briggs' story is actually about a small boy who's lonely. He's a boy on his own, and somehow people, I guess everybody's lonely sometime. I mean, that rings a bell in most people's minds. And the story is he builds this snowman. The snowman comes to life, but the snowman doesn't know anything about the world or how to turn on a light switch or drive a car or anything at all. And so the boy has this extraordinary possibility of saying to an adult, look, this is how you do this. Look, this is how you turn the light on. Look, this is a fridge. And that's actually something that children long to do. They love to show people, look, this is my toy, this is how it's worked. And so this is sort of the ultimate fantasy for children. They just love that part of the story. Also the fact that he flies away, the flying thing, and they go to a party, and then when this being, this snowman, melts at the end, it still makes people cry, because one has built up such a feeling of a friendship. And we all have that in our own lives. You have friendships which go, relationships that die and all that, and this rings another bell. But in a way, you know, you can run the film again, and it just actually presses a lot of buttons in people, and of course it's done with a full orchestra, and it's beautifully done, and I was able to like take a lot of trouble with it, as indeed were the animators, a wonderful girl Diane Jackson who drew the animation, and another Canadian actually, Steve Weston, who animated the flying sequence absolutely brilliantly. So I think a whole lot of elements came together. And it was a very happy film to work, and there was no pressure on us at that time. We just actually wanted to do it. Sometimes that happens in life, you know, that you get a sort of synchronicity. Everybody on it is the right person, and we all manage to make it. That is something that doesn't happen so often.
Right. Well, no, the tune in it, Walking in the Air, that's sort of the main theme that seems to go through the whole thing. How is it that you can take that theme and have it such a central part of the score, and be able to expand on that without repeating it ad nauseum?
In your opinion. yes, I mean it's going back to a little bit earlier, I was saying how, you know, I'd had this tune in my head and I'd never used it, and I'd always thought it was a very strong theme. Mm-hmm. And right from the beginning I thought, well, if I did this, I would use this as the basic material. Now, I'd also, with my classical training, I'd always wanted to write a huge symphony, and in fact, when I first thought of the theme, I thought of it as the first opening theme of a symphony, which I wanted to express innocence and something very natural as a basis to start a big orchestral work. In fact, I never wrote that big orchestral work, but there was the theme, and I thought it had a potential as a theme. So when I got to write the film, I thought, well, I will write variations. So, for instance, when if I play the piano, will you hear that all right?
Yeah.
Okay, this is the theme. That's six very simple notes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's in the minor. Can you hear me now, all right?
I can.
Yeah. That's our main theme. Now, when the snowman goes into the kitchen And he opens the fridge, and light comes out, and it's cold. And for him, it's like sunbathing. So I think, well, I'll turn that. That's a very sad theme. I will do a happy version of that in a sort of Caribbean style, so that we know that we get the idea that this is like going on holiday. So I write the tune in the major like this. See,
mm-hmm.
So it's not at all. It's not the same tune, but it is actually the same notes. So one can say I've created a variation on it, and I do that throughout the film. I use it upside down, backwards, elongated, whatever. But that the theme is actually used in that way to create the material of the whole film. Without getting bored, which is really like what we'd call, going back to the Academy, one would call symphonic development. But the style is nevertheless in a sort of popular style.
Mm-hmm. Now, in a film without dialogue, when the music features so prominently like that, that's a rare thing in a Hollywood production or in a production in general.
Yeah.
Does that mean you bring out the larger palette to sort of show off the music for a film?
Well, I just think I was very lucky to find a vehicle in which I could experiment in that way of actually not to make the music larger or more impressive, but merely to actually make the music more focused, that I managed to create a work that stands up as a concert work in its own right,
mm-hmm.
without any alteration. In fact, it was really because I'd written it in this way. So the following year after I'd written the film, I took it to a concert promoter in London, Raymond Gubba, and I said, you know, would you like to put this in the concert hall? And he agreed to, and it's been going on all over the world ever since. So that is, I think that's probably a first in a way, because I didn't actually touch the film score at all. The only thing I did was I added a commentary so that one could do it in the concert hall.
Mm-hmm.
And one could narrate the story, because of it you can't see it. But we also do it sometimes with the film. I know Toronto Symphony, they do it, and I think they run the film at the same time, play it with the symphony orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've actually I'm actually going to see The Snowman tomorrow. It's playing at a local concert hall here in Canada.
Oh, lovely!
And when I talked to the concert promoter that I was trying to track you down, he was like, "Oh, wow, this is great!" You know, that kind of thing. So yeah.
Well, people always tend to think that composers must be dead, you know, but in fact, I'm not. it's all those big marble busts they put in music shops, you know. You imagine that's what the composers actually were, but of course they were human beings, in fact.
So now, as popular as the work is, finding a recording of it is very difficult. Why is that?
I find that I don't know why it's so difficult. Over here, it's a hugely, hugely successful. It's been out on Sony. It was out originally on CBS Masterworks, mm-hmm. going back to 1983, and it went platinum in a couple of years, which made it sold 300,000. So it sold millions over here. I think it's just record companies. They can't imagine. They're so into pop stars that they can't imagine that something which is instrumental, it can actually be wanted all over the world. But I think it probably is wanted all over. I don't know why they haven't done it. I do my best.
It is a shame because, well, when I first heard the snowman, I said, I have to get this.
Yeah.
It was on a compilation, the world's best classical music ever.
Oh yes, with just the song.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when my wife and I first heard this, we said, we have to find this. And, you know, we looked on Amazon, we looked on this, we looked on that.
You look under the snowman, do you?
Yes.
Because there is the famous album of it, which is 7116 on CBS Masterworks, which has since been out on Sony for at least the last 15 years here. And they've just remastered that with a new 25th anniversary edition with an actor called James Nesbitt.
Ah, yes.
I can assure you that I have in my hand an actual complete brand new CD, and it has a wonderful booklet with the whole story of the pictures in it, and it's called the 25th Anniversary Special Edition. And I did actually write to my producer there and say, can you get this out to Canada? And he said, it'll have to be next year. And I said, well, why? So what else can I do?
Exactly. What else does the future hold for you?
Well, I'm also actually, due to pressure from various people, I've been asked to try and write an autobiography. I've written really a lot of that, hundreds of pages of that, which is really quite a fun thing to do. And I've had one or two publishers talk to me about it, but they always say, well, why don't we take that bit out and stick that in there and change that? And I don't respond too well in that way, having spent my whole life writing music and saying, no, I want it to be like this. I'm not very good at being edited. I shall go on. I mean, I do the odd concert, and I conduct, and I play. But, for instance, I had the most amazing trip last year, the year before, out to Malaysia. I met the Sultan of Selangor, who was... lives in 8 palaces in Malaysia, and he said, would you come and play some of your music in a palace? And I went out, and I had the most amazing time. We had about 100 ambassadors turned up, and I did this amazing concert. And then I flew from there to Hong Kong, where they were doing the Snowman and Grandpa, Hong Kong Chamber Orchestra, were doing in a huge town hall in Hong Kong, and they did both works in Cantonese. How about that? So I still get around quite a bit.
Well, thank you for your time today.
It's been a pleasure.
It's greatly appreciated, and thank you very much for the Snowman and your other music.
It's been very enjoyable. Thank you.